Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, sports fans. It is Sunday, April 27th, 2014. We are getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. Gonna talk some NFL draft. What are the Texans gonna do at number one? What are the top receivers and running backs in the draft? All that will be discussed today. How's everyone doing today? I am your host, Ryan Stern. Welcome to a new episode of Beyond the Bench, brought to you by BacksportsPage.com. Follow them on Twitter, at BacksportsPage. Go to Facebook.com/BacksportsPage. I'm your host, Ryan Stern. Follow me at RStern33BSP. Follow the show on Twitter, at BacksportsPage, or on Facebook. Facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. I hope everyone is enjoying this great month of sports. NFL draft is inching closer. We're in the heat of it with the NBA and NHL playoffs. The MLB season is almost a month into it, and we're starting to see some teams establish themselves as maybe they're going to be contenders as we get through the summer. But we're going to start off with some NFL draft talk, and there has been a bunch of different rumors about the number one overall pick and what the Houston Texans will do. We've heard anyone, anywhere from the obvious, which would be Jadeveon Clowney, to the one who I think is the best fit for the defense. And a report came out that Texans GM Rick Smith actually does prefer University of Buffalo linebacker Khalil Mack over Jadeveon Clowney. And I can definitely see Khalil Mack being the better fit for that defense. He's a 3-4 outside linebacking pass rusher. But he's not just a pass rusher. He is solid in the run game. He can drop into coverage. And he broke the NCAA record for most forced fumbles. So that tells you, forced fumbles come by two ways, either sacking the quarterback, knocking the ball out of his hand, or getting to the running back. As a linebacker, that's how you force fumbles. So if you're going to tell me that someone is going to break the record, that means he's going to be able to do both of those at a high level. He's going to be able to get to the quarterback, and he's going to be able to defend the run. The Texans want to take Khalil Mack. They need to get out of the number one spot in the draft. And there's going to be plenty of teams that are going to want to get into that number one spot, but in such a deep draft, in so many different positions, not every position, but so many different positions in this draft this year, being as deep where you're going to be able to find potential starters on day three. They're not going to be able to get fair market value for the number one overall pick as if it were what happened 2 years ago when it was quarterbacks. When quarterbacks are the top of the draft, then the number one, the number two overall pick are going to be the ones that are going to to command such a high trade value. And as special as Jadeveon Clowney can be, it's still just a pass rusher. And I know pass rushers are in the new NFL where there's such an emphasis on the pass. Getting after the quarterback is a main priority. But you got to look at what happened at pass rushers. You are a Pro Bowl pass rusher if you get one sack a game. If you get one sack, if you end up the season with 16 sacks, you're going to be a Pro Bowler. That's one play. All you need to do is really, if you are a designated pass rusher, you need to make one play a game, and you'll be in the Pro Bowl. Jadeveon Clowney is going to be a Pro Bowl player in some situations. Now, I don't know if Romeo Crennel can institute, who is the defensive coordinator for the Houston Texans. I don't know if Romeo Crennel will adapt his 3-4 mentality to a more traditional 4-3, because that's how Jadeveon Clowney will get to his potential at the earliest point in time. So I don't see Jadeveon Clowney, and as we saw last year, he works best when he's able to get off single teams. And there are too many times in a 3-4 where he's going to be double teamed, even with J.J. Watt on the other side. When you have disruptive pass rushers like them, you're going to want to be able to get to the quarterback
without blitzing. That's what makes defenses scary. That's what made the Seahawks defense, as great as it was last year, it was because they didn't have to blitz. Their front four was able to stop the run, and they were able to get to the quarterback on a consistent basis. And I'm not so sure in a 3-4 they're going to be able to get to the quarterback. Now, I know that they'll also have Whitney Mercilus, who is an outside pass rusher, outside linebacker. If you send the three of them, okay, maybe it'll work. But I think Jadeveon Clowney will have the most success in this league if he is instituted into a 4-3 defense. Like I said, if I'm Houston and I am set that I think Khalil Mack is going to be the best fit for my team, you have to get out of the number one pick, because I don't think Khalil Mack is worth, and believe me, I love watching his tape, but it is at a school where you don't face competition that puts out NFL caliber prospects on a consistent basis. And I know that the one game that he had against Ohio State, again, another one, he was dominant in that. But there just isn't enough tape on Khalil Mack, and I still have Khalil Mack as a top five player on my board. But I'm not interested in taking a top five player at number one. I want the number one player at number one. And you're going to see teams like Jacksonville, they're going to be interested in Clowney. Teams like the Atlanta Falcons, they're going to be interested in Clowney. You'll probably be able to get more out of the Falcons just because they're coming from the sixth spot as opposed to the three from Jacksonville. But if you drop down to six, then now you're taking the risk that you also miss out on Khalil Mack. And I don't think that, and that's been the big rumor this week, is that the Houston Texans are, that they may be in discussions with the Atlanta Falcons about the number six and number one picks in the draft. I don't know what Atlanta is willing to give up, because they're probably going, in order to get from six to one, they're probably going to have to at least give up their second-round pick this year and a first-round pick next year. No, I know that's not what anywhere close to what the St. Louis Rams got for Robert Griffin III, but that's the difference between a pass rusher and a quarterback. If it were a quarterback, like I said, if Andrew Luck were in this draft, and well, if Andrew Luck were in this draft, then Houston would be taking him. But if there were an Andrew Luck in this draft and the Houston Texans had a quarterback already and they were looking, they said, you know what, we think it's worth it for us to trade out of the number one overall pick because it's going to help the future of the franchise, then there would have been, they would have been able to get probably 3 1s and 2 2s, at least, for a quarterback, for a team coming up from six up to one. And look at what the Redskins, they gave up 3 1s and 1 2 to go from six to two to get RG3. And then there is the quarterback situation with the Houston Texans.
there's been two names linked to them at the top of the board. And early on in draft discussions, it was Blake Bortles, and most people still feel that Blake Bortles' best fit in the NFL will be with the Houston Texans because of Bill O'Brien, the new head coach of the Houston Texans. The quarterbacks that he has had success with are your prototypical size quarterbacks, your 6'4", 6'5", 220 to 240, but that's his specialty. And mainly his specialty being Tom Brady. Blake Bortles is more like a Ben Roethlisberger than he is a Tom Brady, but he still has that prototypical size and will be able to run an offense closer to what Bill O'Brien has run in the past than Johnny Manziel will. And that's been all the talk over the past, is that is Johnny Manziel worth the number one overall pick? Because a lot of, with pro days and personal workouts, we have seen a shift in a lot of different big boards as to who the number one quarterback is. Now, I still have Teddy Bridgewater as my number one quarterback. There's just too much tape on him where Teddy Bridgewater took some hits in while he was a quarterback at Louisville. Some of the hits he's going to have to avoid. He's going to have to learn how to throw the ball away, make quicker decisions. But there are times where he's gotten leveled and still made perfect throws. Two instances. In fact, both they were in back-to-back games in the 2012 season. The final regular season game of the year for the Big East. It was the last ever Big East game played between Rutgers and Louisville. Whoever won the game won the Big East regular season and would go to a BCS poll. And Teddy Bridgewater, his receiver got jammed at the line, didn't get as clean a release as he wanted, came across the middle on a crossing route, and ended up having about a step or two on his cornerback. One of the Rutgers linebackers came in and absolutely leveled Bridgewater, and Bridgewater stayed in the pocket, had the presence, knew he was going to take the hit, and delivered a perfect pass for a 25-yard gain. Then in the Orange Bowl against Florida, first pass of the game, protection breaks down, he rolls out to his right, and John Bostic, who is now with the Chicago Bears, absolutely leveled him, knocked his helmet off. Bridgewater said it was the hardest hit he's ever taken in his life. And he was able to not only find a quarterback, I think it was his tight end, along the right sideline, but place it over two defenders right into his hands. It was if you had a clean pocket, you couldn't have placed the ball any more perfect than what Teddy Bridgewater did in that instance. And they took it from there and went all the way to really manhandling the Florida Gators in the 2013, but it was Orange Bowl, but for the 2012 season. There's just too much tape for me, I still think that Teddy Bridgewater is my number one quarterback. But if I'm the Texans, I can see why the two quarterbacks that are linked to them are Bortles and Manziel. The Bortles thing because of the Bill O'Brien, and that's what he wants his quarterback to look like. And then Johnny Manziel, who is the most polarizing player that we've had probably since Tim Tebow in the NFL draft. There wasn't any real discussion of Tebow being picked as high as Johnny Manziel is expected. Tim Tebow wasn't expected to be a first-round pick. The Broncos surprised us all by taking him. I believe it was at number 25. It was either 25 or 26 was when we saw Tim Tebow come off the board, and that was a shock. So there are more expectations for Johnny Manziel than Tim Tebow, and with great understandability. Johnny Manziel has a better arm. He's more accurate. And I think he can make more throws than a Tim Tebow could. And I don't mean to get into a whole Tim Tebow discussion in April, as we're less than 2 weeks away from the draft. But I like Tim Tebow. I just don't think he's a great quarterback. Yes, he knows how to win. But there are only so many instances where it was he got the win because of other players on his team. So, all right, that's all. That's all for Tim Tebow, I promise. Sorry. Back to with the number one overall pick. I think if the Texans stay in the number one spot, I think there is a good chance that they trade out if they really feel that Khalil Mack is the better fit. Or maybe they trade down. Maybe what they're looking at is they're looking at number six. If they fall down with Atlanta, then and Atlanta takes, because Atlanta will take Clowney number one overall. Then you're looking maybe the Rams, they either take Sammy Watkins or Greg Robinson at number three. Then maybe the Jaguars take Johnny Manziel at number four. The Browns will take whichever one is available of Watkins or Robinson. At number five, the Raiders will, there are plenty of ways that they can go. So now you're looking at maybe Khalil Mack and Blake Bortles be available for the Texans at six. So they should definitely have a chance of getting one of the two of Mack and Bortles and still be able to pick up a number two this year and possibly another number one next year. So I can see that happening. I wouldn't be opposed to it if I'm a Houston Texans fan. I had mentioned Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is the top wide receiver in the draft, and now for my top 10 wide receivers. Obviously, Sammy Watkins, number one overall from Clemson. He's a straight-out playmaker. There were some people who were comparing him to Anquan Boldin. I think he's better. He's faster than Anquan Boldin, more explosive than Anquan Boldin. I think he can get up and make a catch at its highest point better than Anquan Boldin. And if it were Anquan Boldin, and I'm not trying to knock Boldin. I think he's a great player. But I'm not interested in Anquan Boldin at number 2 overall in the draft. I'm not interested in Anquan Boldin at number as my top overall quarterback. Wide receiver, I apologize. My number 2 wide receiver, Mike Evans, Texas A&M. He was Johnny Manziel's go-to guy. Two NFL comparisons for Mike Evans are either Alshon Jeffrey and Vincent Jackson. The Vincent Jackson one is interesting because there are a lot of teams who have Mike Evans married to the Tampa Bay Bucks at number 7. And I think that's very well possible. But I think if one of the tackles slips in the draft, if we start to see quarterbacks go earlier and one of the tackles slips, maybe they go tackle at number 7. But I think Mike Evans makes a lot of sense there, too. Yeah, and that my number 3 wide receiver is Odell Beckham Jr. from LSU. He can play inside. He can play outside. He can beat you with speed. He can beat you with route running. He's a playmaker. And there's another wide receiver from LSU that's in the top 10 that I think may be more pro-ready but isn't as explosive as Odell Beckham Jr., my number 3 wide receiver out of LSU. My number 4 wide receiver is Brandon Cook, wide receiver out of Oregon State. And this is not just because Brandon Cooks ran the fastest 40 time of any wide receiver and the second fastest of anybody at the Combine, only falling to Dre Archer, the running back out of Kent State. Brandon Cooks is a real good route runner, and better than a lot of super quick wide receivers that there are in the NFL. I especially love his patterns when he runs, when he's in the slot and runs like out patterns or zig patterns, where he goes from inside to outside as opposed to from outside to inside. The explosion off of his right leg when he's out of the left slot is outstanding. That's where I've seen most of his slot footage was when he was slot left. The explosion that he gets out of that right leg is great. I think Brandon Cooks is with Beckham. I can see Beckham going anywhere from 15 with the Steelers. I think he's a good fit. There's some people saying that he's a fit for the Ravens. I don't think the Ravens are in need of a wide receiver in the first round. I think that with Torrey Smith, Steve Smith, that Marlon Brown, I think they're okay at wide receiver. I think they would rather upgrade the offensive line or the linebacking core or a safety. I think there are 3 other positions that I would find to be of greater need for them in the first round. I don't see Odell Beckham Jr. getting past 18 at the Jets, though. So you can look. I can see him going 15, maybe 16, but it's tough to see, to imagine Odell Beckham Jr. getting past the Jets. Again, Brandon Cooks, I can say the earliest Brandon Cooks coming off the board would be around 18. If Odell Beckham Jr. is gone, I can see Brandon Cooks going anywhere from 18 to 23. I think he's a good fit for the Jets. He's a different type of receiver than Eric Decker. I guess I can see him at 18. I can see him at 20 to the Cardinals. I can see Brandon Cooks even going 21. I can see him going anywhere 20, 21, 22, 23. The Packers may be the least of the four because they probably will look to upgrade the defense before the offense. But then 22, 23, I think one of those two teams, either Philly at 22, Kansas City at 23, may have to trade up if either one of them fall in love with Brandon Cooks. They may need to trade up to get him. My number five wide receiver in the draft. Going to shock some people. And it's a name that was brought up last week with Charles Curtis of NJ.com. Cody Latimer, the wide receiver out of Indiana. This kid is a straight-out football player. I love what he brings to the table. He's got size. He's in between 6'3 and 6'4 speed. He runs a 40 in the 4.4s. If he had any sort of competent quarterback play, he'd be in the 2-3, maybe behind Mike Evans, but I can definitely see him in front of Odell Beckham Jr. if he had tape that where he had quarterback play. You put him at a Michigan State where I'm just trying to think of other Big Ten teams. I don't even say Ohio State because they very rarely they weren't a big throwing team. But if you put him at Alabama, if you put him at Texas A&M, if he were at Louisville, Cody Latimer would be a top 15 pick in this draft. And he's going to be a steal if he gets anywhere into the second round. And I wouldn't have him getting into the second round, but he's a lot higher on my board than he is on other boards that I've read. Really, the only other guy that I've seen have Cody Latimer as high as I do is Todd McShay. And I give McShay credit for opening my eyes about Cody Latimer. This kid can really, really, really make a team better. And a team that I would love to see him as a fit, or maybe not love to see, but I think is a perfect fit, is going to be the Carolina Panthers. He's going he would probably step in and be the number one wide receiver. So maybe that's not a perfect fit. Maybe he's not ready to beat number one cornerbacks that he's going to have to face in the NFL. Maybe he's a better fit for the Saints at 27. But I think this kid's going to be an absolute stud. So I like him in the 27-28 range. My number six wide receiver, Marquise Lee, wide receiver out of USC, who has taken a plummet down a lot of boards with his injury issue, lack of production in 2013. I still think he may end up being the fourth or fifth wide receiver off the board, and I can see him going anywhere from maybe a 23 Kansas City. Maybe he's a fit for to 27. Marquise Lee maybe at 28. Again, some of the same range. I don't see Marquise Lee getting out of the first round because I think if he reaches the 49ers, even though the 49ers need major help in the secondary, and there have even been rumors that the 49ers, who have a ton of picks in this draft, including three in the top 60. About the 49ers looking to trade up to acquire Mike Evans. That's what good teams do. Good teams are always looking to get themselves the best players. They have a lot of, as I said, they have a lot of ammunition. They have a lot of picks, and they have some higher picks. They have two second-round picks with the trade of Alex Smith to Kansas City. They hold Kansas City's second-round pick. Maybe they, if they're looking to get up to, they may have to go all the way to seven. Maybe they give up their one, a two this year, and a one next year, and this way they still will have a second round pick. So that, if I'm Tampa Bay, that's very intriguing. Tampa Bay will, in a deep wide receiver draft, will still be able to get a wide receiver if they drop down to 30. But it would be they'd have to acquire another first-round pick somewhere just for dropping down 23 spots. So my number seven wide receiver, Kelvin Benjamin, the big guy out of Florida State, caught the game-winning touchdown in the national championship game over the Iron Bowl clinching Chris Davis with that little slant. And Chris Davis got a nice jam at the line, but Chris Davis is 5'10", 185, and Kelvin Benjamin is 6'4", 240. It really isn't fair. it's tough to ask a player like Chris Davis to cover Kelvin Benjamin, because he can have perfect coverage and a throw can still be made that he won't be able to defend. So Kelvin Benjamin, not a lot of production, but not a lot of production reception-wise. But when he did make those receptions, he turned them into touchdowns. He was very productive getting into the end zone last year. And I think Kelvin Benjamin, I can see him anywhere from, there's even been talks that the Jets like him at 18, so I can see him going anywhere from 18 all the way into the early second round. Whether or not teams would prefer his size, but I think Kelvin Benjamin is maybe a little more physical, but when you're looking at all the measurables, Kelvin Benjamin, I would rather Cody Latimer than Kelvin Benjamin. The latest I would see Kelvin Benjamin going is 43 to the Giants, because I think that he's a perfect complement to a Victor Cruz and a Ruben Randle. And there's been maybe a question or two about work ethic. Players don't go into Tom Coughlin's meeting rooms and come out of it with a work ethic problem. Just doesn't happen. But I don't see Kelvin Benjamin even getting down to 43. I said that's the latest I would see. My number 8 wide receiver is Jordan Matthews out of Vanderbilt. Nice little size-speed combination. Again, not a lot of play based on just the fact that there hasn't been, he wasn't with great quarterbacks. Jordan Matthews was a lot higher on a lot of boards earlier on in draft season. And I don't think it's been more about him slipping. I think it's been more about other players rising and taking advantage of him not setting himself apart from them. Players like Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks. The two of them were both behind Jordan Matthews on my boards when draft season really began. My number 9 guy, second LSU Tiger, is Jarvis Landry. Jarvis Landry I think he's going to be a real player in the NFL. There's a perfect, if you're looking for anybody who is a perfect comparison to Anquan Boldin, I think it's Jarvis Landry. And the only reason why Jarvis Landry isn't as high on a lot of boards, and he fell on my board. I think I originally had him around 5 or 6. is because he didn't run well. But not a lot of people were expecting him to run well, because he's not that fifth-year player. He doesn't have the explosiveness that other players in this draft have. But what he does have is a great route-running tree, and he has hands. This kid can catch anything. So one of the lines that I heard about him was that this kid can catch a cold in the desert. And that's someone that I would love. I say it is going to be a steal. And I'm telling you, an absolute steal for someone in the early and mid second round. But as we are wrapping up our NFL draft talk for today, we will get into some NBA talk as we welcome the founder, BackSportsPage.com, the one, the only, Randy Zelia. How are you this morning, Randy?
I'm doing okay this morning, Ryan. How are you today, my friend?
We're doing well. We're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. Breaking down my wide receivers, we had a nice long discussion about the number one overall pick, which, and there are plenty of different ways that the Houston Texans may go, anywhere from taking the obvious Jadeveon Clowney at the top, maybe trading out, maybe going with Johnny Football there at number one. I don't know. I would assume you know the name of Johnny Manziel and Jadeveon Clowney.
Yes, I do.
If you're looking at the Texans and you have a need at quarterback and you have a player like Jadeveon Clowney, who some people have considered a once-in-a-decade player, where are you going?
I think you have to really look at you know, a guy like Manziel, the Texas guy, and you have to look at Clowney, and you have to say, what is your biggest need right now? Because let's look at it realistically. Up until last season, the Texans were not a team that if you told them at the beginning of the year that they were going to be going to the number one pick in the draft instead of being a Super Bowl contender, I think everyone would have laughed at you. This was not really that bad of a team. I felt like they were a very complacent team. They felt like they were a team that you can turn it on and off. There should have been signs during the previous year's playoff run, where towards the end of the season they started falling off, and then during the playoffs they completely fell off after a great start the season before. They have to really look at themselves. Are they back to being a player away, or are they in the rebuilding mode? And if they're in the rebuilding mode, then they have to get rid of some people. And I think if you're going to rebuild around a quarterback, if you're going to start your rebuilding process, you have to do it around the quarterback. And I think maybe then you can take a Manziel, let him grow into the position. If you're going to go into the route of, okay, we are where we are, let's just plug somebody in the quarterback position because we're okay in other positions, then I think you go Clowney. But you don't really know the thinking. You know, as soon as somebody thinks they have a good understanding of thinking on how a team's going to go, then they're proven wrong. So, and I the Texans are a great intriguing story to watch over the next week or so. We had spoken to Herman Edwards briefly, and I said to him jokingly, I said, are the Texans going to trade the pick? And I meant it just as a joking question just to break the ice with him. And it turned into a 45-minute answer. And that's why I love Herm. But, you know, Herm was sitting there saying there's all these different possibilities on why this can happen, this can happen, this can happen. Then he goes, right at the end, he goes, at the end of the day, none of us know but the Texans. You know me, Ryan, I'm a huge fan of letting things play out instead of trying to speculate, because when you start trying to speculate things, you almost drive yourself crazy. So I'm interested to see where the Texans are going to go with it. My gut feeling is that they made the playoffs with this core group for a good amount of years. I think after a certain amount of time, a rebuilding process has to come into play. So I would probably go with Manziel and then, you know, rebuild around them, if that was me.
Very, very interesting. Now, you're an NBA guy.
Oh, I'm disgustingly an NBA guy.
And the biggest news out of the NBA is the comments that are being reported about Clippers owner Donald Sterling made to his minority girlfriend. And we've started to hear some backlash from some NBA players. And it's not just some NBA players. We've already heard comments from LeBron James, Chris Paul, and Kobe Bryant. Take us into what is a possibility of an outcome and what is really going through the mind of a Donald Sterling.
I don't know what's going through the mind of Donald Sterling. I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I will tell you, I think with any situation, any action, there's going to be reaction and maybe even overreaction. I think right now what we're getting is, you know, they said this was a little bit of a backlash of a recorded phone conversation that they think might be Donald Sterling. TMZ loves breaking news, man. I'll tell you, God bless TMZ, because you know how accurate they are. They're 100% on top of everything, right, that TMZ crew? And just for those who are listening who don't understand what I'm saying, it's sarcasm. Listen, you know, I always say you have to let everything find a way to play itself out. The initial reaction from everybody is understandable. It's a very, very sticky situation because as a society we've come so far as far as equality and equal rights and acceptance of all types of different people, and we've come a long way. And Donald Sterling is, if this is true, again, there's still a lot of investigating that has to go on here,
right?
Whether this was him saying it. So like, you know, that's why I'm being very coy about the whole situation. You know, I think at this point the situation has to play itself out, and people are reacting, and the African American community, especially the NBA players, have every right to be in uproar. The players on his team and the head coach of that team deserve to be in an uproar. But I think it would have served better if nobody from the Clipper organization, as far as the players and the coaches, got involved with this. I think it would be better if they would have just said, listen, our focus is not on this. We'll deal with this in time. Let's focus on the playoffs. Let's focus on the games we have to play. I think there's a better way. I think that's a better way of handling this. Instead of jumping into the fire, let's see if this is a real fire or how big of a brush fire this is before we keep throwing gasoline on the fire. You know what I mean?
Right. And exactly. So you know what? I'm going to take your advice, and I'm going to worry about some of the play. What has surprised you so far in the first, we're either three or four games into most series? What has surprised you so far?
Can I be honest, there's only been one series that really surprised me so far. I wasn't expecting Chicago to go down 0-2. The fact that they play today and they can just as easily tie the series back up to 2-2, nothing surprises me, I guess, with the NBA. It's been a very competitive playoffs. What gets me, I think what's very surprising to me, is the overreaction by media and social media per game. You know, we had Ian Eagle on with us for the NBA playoff preview show, Back Sports Page, Real Sports Talk Radio, NBA playoff preview show. Download it now on iTunes. when we had it on, you know, we broke down every series, and I said to Ian, I said, the Nets-Raptors series to me is going to have a very familiar script. I said, the Nets are going to come out and win game one. The Nets are going to cost themselves game two. And then if Nets come out today and win game four, then we're following the same script of 2007, where the Nets beat the Raptors in six games. I'll be honest with you, the NBA Eastern Conference doesn't surprise me at all. Indiana struggling a little bit doesn't surprise me at all. I think them getting a win yesterday was huge. I think they got their grittiness back because they were supporting each other. They were right there. I think that's going to be a turnaround for them. Miami destroying Charlotte doesn't surprise me. Chicago and Washington, I still pick Chicago to win that series due to the experience. They win today. It's back to being a neutral series going back to Chicago. And the Brooklyn and Toronto series, I think it's going seven, but I hope it's going six. You know, my heart's telling me six, my gut's telling me seven. So, you know, the Eastern Conference is turning out the way I thought it would be. The Western Conference, again, same thing with the Portland-Houston series. Nobody expected Houston to go down 0-2, and they win tonight. It's back even. So,
it's back
you
even.
Know, the overreaction we have to games is amazing. You know, Dallas, that was a... I love Vince Carter. You know me. I'm a diehard Nets guy.
Yep.
I have nothing but love for Vince. That shot yesterday, that's great. I still think San Antonio's going to win the next game, come back and win game five, and they'll win the game six. You know what I mean? That's the script that's built in my head because I've seen all these situations before by covering the league. So I think San Antonio's going to win their series. OKC is going to win their series. Because I just think that they're overall better teams, even though Memphis is not their normal number 7 seed. Your Golden State-Clippers series is still the most intriguing one. I can't pick a winner on that one because Golden State's not your average 6 seed. So it's just so good. I'm enjoying the playoffs. They're exciting games, definitely.
You got to look at what the Clippers are going through. They have an all-time franchise season, and then their reward for having that season is the Golden State Warriors. It's almost not fair.
it's not only that, though. There's something very weird about the Clippers. I feel like they're missing something in their lineup. I feel like you have Chris Paul, you have Blake Griffin. Who's your third? Who's J.J. Redick, as much as I know you're a Duke guy, J.J. Redick, to me, is not that.
He's
going to get the
player.
Ball.
He's not a go-to guy. He's a role player.
I need that swing. I need that swing player. I need that third guy. Griffin's not hitting a three. I want Paul to distribute the ball. So who's that third guy? I don't think the Clippers have it. I still think they're a player away.
You don't have any faith in DeAndre Jordan?
If you look at the last 2 minutes of games, in Clipper games, you tell me how often DeAndre Jordan's actually in the game, and then we'll go back and have that conversation again.
Very fair, very fair. One more thing before we end the show. I wanted to get into we sort of ran a little late with time today. The Michael Pineda incident. Is there a guy who can be any more idiotic? Because the first time that he plays the Red Sox, that he pitches, there's mysterious shiny substance on his hand. And he's saying that it's dirt. And it wasn't like he got away with it and it wasn't a media spectacle. The media was all over it the first time that it happened. And then he has the cojones to go out and put it on his neck where it's in plain sight. It's not like it's under the jersey. His neck is shiny. His neck looks like the Lombardi Trophy. It's a brown version of the Lombardi Trophy, how shiny that substance was. Is the 10-game suspension warranted, or do you think it should be it should have been a little bit more harsh?
Yeah, I definitely think it could have been a little bit more harsh. I think Major League Baseball handled everything the right way. He cheated and he got caught. Now what happens from here, it's up to him. And let's see if he's smart enough to do something smart about it. Now, it's easier said than done. Let's see how it goes. It was stupid. It's one of the things where I laughed. It's because it's one of those stories that it's a big deal, but it's a big. Now we're making it a much bigger deal than it has to be. And what I am looking forward to is the first Subway Series this year, and listening to Mets fans when Pineda starts pitching against them, because they're just brutal. Ryan, real quick before you go, I just wanted to is it okay if I do a breathtaking or not breathtaking, a big announcement on your show? Is that okay? Do I have break news?
Absolutely.
Real Sports Talk Radio in the near future, I think maybe next week or the week after, we are going to take a break from sports, if that makes sense. Real Sports Talk Radio. We'll still talk a little bit of sports, but we'll do a little bit of a different topic. Just announced how Mike Tremontozzi is going to take the night off, if he wants. He can join the show if he wants. I think he'll be a little bit off topic. But we have Katie Hutchinson, who's a news back sports page writer, and she's going to be joining the show, and we're going to be joined by Chef Brian Duffy. Those who watch Bar Rescue.
Absolutely.
Chef Duffy joins John Taffer to help rebuild these bars. And Katie was a member of one of the bars that John and Chef Duffy rescue. So she's going to co-host the show with me. We're going to have Brian Duffy on, and we're going to have like a bar rescue edition of Real Sports Talk Radio.
I will definitely be tuning into that one.
And then not only that, but we're also going to try and reach out to some of the bars that they've rescued and get a quick updates from them to see how everything went. So that's the announcement. We finalized everything this morning. We're just working on the date. So keep up on Back Sports Page for that news. But I figured it was the right time to break that news.
Look at that. Beyond the Bench, breaking news worldwide.
Oh, you're being really too kind with that aspect of it. But, Ryan, excellent job as always. We'll be in contact soon.
You got it.
All right, brother.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
The one, the only, Randy Zelia. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Next week will be our big NFL draft show. We're going to have interviews from beat writers from across the country, from schools that cover players that are projected to be high picks. We're going to find out what they're like on campus, maybe a little bit off the field, if they're maybe didn't do so well in class. Maybe he's a standout citizen. We're going to really dig deep on or attempt to dig deep on some of the nation's top players with their beat writers. We will also be having a live mock draft on air. We are going to be cycling through picks. It is not going to be just myself. It is going to be a panel. Panel members will be introduced during the week, so make sure you keep in touch with us on Twitter at @BackSportsPage, at Beyond the Bench. Go to facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP or follow me on Twitter at @RStern33BSP. Thank you for listening to another episode of Beyond the Bench. And we will see you next week with our big NFL draft preview show. Have a great week, everybody.